Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Hello, everybody. Good evening, and welcome to the Gridiron Beauties Blitz radio show. And this is Nkeshi Free, and I am joined by the awesome Eric Brown and Oscar Lopez. Hi, guys.
Hey, Nkeshi. How's it going today?
It's going great. We're glad to have you back. A long time before since we've had you on the air.
Good to be back. Good to be back.
So what's been going on?
Well, some changes are happening personally, so that's the reason I was out for a while. Also doing some things with the project. You know how that goes with PR, and we've talked about that before. That's a lot of legwork and networking, so still doing things behind the scenes. Still working on getting you over to the Hall of Fame game, as we talked about before. And other than that, Erica needed some time off and spent some family, and more than happy to fill in. So I'm glad to be here with you guys.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
Eric, how are you doing, buddy? How's the weather?
Doing good. Yeah, the weather's pretty nice. It's starting to get a little warm, starting to get a little toasty. So it's about that time of the year where I'll be sweating pretty much 24/7. But that's a fair trade-off for mild winters, so I'll take that.
Yeah, it works out pretty well. Well, out here in California, I was telling Nkeshi off the air, everybody's in warrior frenzy land out here. So, you know, yellow and blue and, you know,
right.
Take down LeBron is a theme around here.
Yeah, it seems to be a theme everywhere he goes.
Yeah, I didn't anticipate the Cavs going to be in the mix. And I tweeted something earlier and I said, you know, this is kind of an NBA Finals with Golden State and the Cavaliers, and it isn't going to be such a great game, but I guess I had to eat my words.
Well, maybe not, if depending on how it goes tonight. I think tonight is really going to set the tone for how the rest of this series is going to go, especially with Kyrie Irving out, you know, with that knee injury. So I think the first game was way better than anybody expected, but I think that, you know, we have to see what kind of game it is tonight. If the Cavaliers lose in a blowout fashion, I think everybody's just going to give up and be prepared for a sweep. I think the Cavs will at least win one at home. But if they can fight back tonight and win tonight on the road, or at least keep the score really, really close, then I think people will be turned in for a series.
Yeah, and I think it'll be great. Today in the show, we are going to have the amazing and always friend of ours and the multi-talented Mr. Scott McCarron of the Seattle Majestics, who are undefeated in the 2015 WFA season and literally own the Pacific Northwest right now. The only adversary to them is the Tacoma Trauma, which is a huge improvement for them as well, and they've done great in their season. And you can pretty much punch them in now as the WFA has elite teams. You know how we consider certain elite teams in the NFL as staples, you know, the Cowboys, the Redskins, the Giants, and so forth. He is now, his team is creeping down. In the last 2 years, he is now considered probably one of the top 10 nationwide in terms of notoriety, in terms of Seattle, and that's great for him because Seattle is a big market. The Seahawks have done well. And ultimately, being in the mix with the Boston Renegades, the DC Divas, the Chicago Force, and the Dallas Elite, and the San Diego Surge doesn't hurt either. So we're going to be talking to him in a couple minutes regarding that. And on top of that, Eric, just to, like I told Nkeshi off the air, Mr. McCarron has done all this wonderful work with an 8-0 start with his roster being literally almost 98% rookies of 1 or 2 years. So these are women that are just diving into the sport, learning the ins and outs of the playbook. And he only has, I think, only a handful of veterans, only about five, and every veteran after that is probably 5 years or older. So a lot of young women that have given their heart and soul to this team, and it's proven them well with an 8-0 start.
Yeah, I was able to see some clips as well, and you know, it seems like they picked the game up very quickly, and to be so dominant, I mean, that's just crazy at this point.
Yeah, if you saw the stat sheet, I was telling Inkishi earlier, their stat sheet, they've only allowed through week 9, they've only allowed, I believe, 24 points. So they're allowing literally almost, I think that's what, 4 points a game? That's like an amazing defense.
Right. Yeah, so like I said, I got to see clips from when they played the Phillies and the Blitz, and I mean the defense was just smothering, and I mean the offense, I mean they've got a huge amount of talent on offense. It's like pretty much anyone who touches the ball, they're scoring touchdowns. So yeah, it'll be fun to talk to them.
Yeah, and on top of that, they have former Team USA and world champion Holly Cuttis, who came over from Portland. So you know right there, a very legit individual, as well as Michelle Volt, who's 12 years. She's a backup quarterback as well. So they've got leadership also on the bench in terms of teaching. And you have some quality wide receivers like Adrian Wilson. But Scott will talk into that. You know, he's going to let us know exactly. And then Rachel Wood stepping in for Rachel Gore, who actually moved to Chicago. And so be it. Rachel Gore takes over for the historic franchise in Chicago. And that's Sammy Grisafi's role, and she hasn't missed a beat.
Now, we interviewed Sammy before. We interviewed
Sammy before.
Yeah, because she's retiring now, right? Because I think
she's going into music. We talked to her about transitioning into her label and her music.
Right.
But she was very instrumental in getting Chicago to be a force in this league nationally. And it votes well for Scott, who took Rachel Gore under his wing and did well in the Majestics, with the Majestics. And now she's evolved under in Chicago even more. So you have to credit him as well.
Well, and I saw that. I guess we'll wait till Scott gets on, because I was checking out some other really cool things that they've got going on, and I saw the information on the on their Facebook page. So I'm gonna wait and let Scott talk about that when he comes on. But what about the any updates from the WFL league?
Yeah, we're going to get the updates since we're going to have a quick show. I don't know. Is Scott on right now?
No, Scott's not on yet.
Okay. Well, when he comes on, just let us know. Basically, we're going to run them down. Those are the scores for now. Everybody can go to follow at Backseat Coach, our network partner, and get the rundown on that. But there's a couple key scores that we can go over, just temporarily at this point. It's week 9 in the WFA, and it was Divas, who are 8-0 also, the Divas, and that's out of your homecoming there in D.C. And these girls are on a roll as well. They're 8-0, 27-7, take care of Cleveland. Cleveland has improved tremendously over the last 3 seasons. You got to give them credit. They should be the buzz besides the Browns. These girls are just amazing. So, you know, forget Johnny Football and everything else that's happening in the Brown land. Everybody should be going over to watch the Cleveland Fusion play football. 27-7, that's the score. Divas improved. They obviously in the playoffs. This is just kind of a rundown, but they're going to the playoffs at this point. On our Facebook page, we have Mr. Ranzall from D.C. who sent us the preview of the weekend for week 9, and so you guys can go to our Facebook page and read up on that in terms of the situation with the playoffs. The Force, 60-7 over Indy. They continue their onslaught and into the playoffs, and they're obviously a staple team. The West Michigan Mayhem, 43-8 over the Columbus Comets. They stay in the race against that division with Chicago for the playoff berth. Atlanta rebounds 66-0 over the Daytona Wave Raiders, and they're going to face, I believe, Jacksonville next week, which Jacksonville took care of Miami Fury in the in that swing down south of Florida, 23-9. It's kind of like a triangle out there. It's Atlanta, Jacksonville, and Miami usually in the mix in that for the playoff berth. And then you throw in the always talented Tampa Bay Inferno in that mix as well. So the Elite, they basically are on a roll. They won 9-0. They're pretty much a shoe-in at this point. The South Texas Crushers could not field the team, so they get the forfeited win, and that makes them, you know, rest another week there. You got Seattle, which Scott's team, 56-0 versus the Everett Rain. So he stays, like I said, undefeated in that division. As well as we stay in the Northwest Division, it was the Shockwave 30 and the Portland Phillies 12. So they're trying to keep their playoff hopes alive there in Portland in Shockwave land. And then Tacoma Trauma, 24-0 against Utah Blitz. So Tacoma keeping in the race for the division title there within the Majestics realm. You also had the War Angels, who previously last week and the week before had lost to San Diego, which is a top-notch national team. So now they rebound 59-12 against the Sin City Sun Devils out of Vegas. And then the San Diego Surge are looking to, for the national championship rebirth. It's in their backyard, the national championship for the WFA. It's in L.A., so it's kind of fitting if they make it that far. It would be right there, right in their homeland. They took on the Pacific Warriors, who have much improved Warriors this year. But unfortunately, that, in this outing yesterday, San Diego was just too tough, 48-8, allowing only 8 points to the Warriors. So a good team there as well. And the swing in the Missouri area, St. Louis, just 35-22 over Kansas City. Both teams, Kansas City traditionally high-powered with Katie Sowers, but for the most part, St. Louis, the running game has worked really well this year. So 35-22 there in the WFA. The IWFL scores, like I said, you can follow at Backseat Coach and you get the rundown there. Pittsburgh, Montreal in the mix there, the New York Sharks as well. So you have a couple teams in that league that are going to be vying for the playoffs. Get the rundown follow at Backseat Coach on Twitter for all the rundown and the info as well. Is Scott on yet?
Nope, not yet.
Nobody's come on yet?
What?
Okay. Let me see if I can tweet him and remind him. Maybe he forgot that we were going to be on today. I know he was excited to be on. So I'll direct message him here.
Oh, yeah, because I saw a couple of the posts
on there.
Well, While we wait for Scott, some other things we could definitely talk about in terms of the NFL is the fact that the 49ers have lost another player yet again to retirement. And, that's really interesting to see so many guys under the age of 30 that are retiring so soon. And I wonder what message does this send for the sport, especially at the younger levels. Is it get in, play fast, get your money and get out? What's going to happen to the longevity of the players as well as the game itself? Eric, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Go ahead, Eric.
Well, to me, the question is, because it seems to be happening to, just one team right now. I know that the average NFL career is just under 4 years, so it's not like they play that long anyway. But since it just seems like it's just happening to the 49ers, I just wonder if there's something going on in the organization that is making these guys want to either, not be in football anymore, or they just want to be basically released from their contracts and they have to retire to do that. And then maybe they're going to come back at some point down the road. So, I kind of have a question there is, kind of behind the scenes, what's happening? Why does it just seem like it's the 49ers right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you, Eric. I think it's a matter of internal now, because that's like more than one player. If it was kind of a trend in the league, I think you would have a lot of players from different teams doing the same situation. So, I'm with you there. I think there's some things that we haven't or somebody hasn't dwelled into as much. But in Kishi, a lot of it has to do with the fact that some of these players look into it, and depending on your opportunity on the field, maybe some of them just decide that it's best to step away because they're not going to be able to get that opportunity in terms of shining, you know, being up front and center.
Right. Well, and it makes sense. If you're not going to be a Marshawn Lynch or, you know, a big name player, then yes, go ahead and save your brain and your body so that you can be able to continue to live a functional life, you know, once your playing days are over. Well, I know one thing, though. We actually are going to have to put this wonderful conversation on hold because Scott has just checked in. So I'm going to pull him in.
Perfect.
And hi.
And
hi,
so
Scott.
Welcome, Scott McCarron of the Seattle Majestics, the undefeated Seattle Majestics, we might add. Hey, Scott, how's it going? You're on with Nkechi Free and Eric Brown.
It's going great. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, right. Scott.
How are you guys doing?
We're good.
We're exhausted after all this NBA talk.
No, we are not. We are exhausted because it's been a long weekend. But no, I'm excited to talk to you and learn more about the fabulous job your team's doing.
Well, thanks for having me. I mean, this is an easy job. I was actually helping a friend of mine remodel a kitchen this afternoon, so taking time out to to talk on the radio is a lot easier.
I hope the beer's coming, because that's usually helpful.
All in due time, Oscar, all in due time.
Scott, all I can tell you is I can't seem to do anything but hype you up. I mean, this is great. I looked at the roster. I was talking to Eric earlier and Kishi. Unbelievable. You have a roster of, like, literally, what, 98% rookies?
It's, yeah, we had a lot of roster turnover in the off season. Had a lot of young players come in, which is really, really good to see. Some of them had played for other organizations. They're just in their, you know, mid to late 20s. So they still have a lot of years left to be able to play if they want to, but, yeah, we've had a really, really, really good crop of incoming players this year, and it's really elevated our play quite a bit. Really didn't lose as much as I thought we would have in terms of overall talent. You know, we're losing Karen Lawton and Gore and Jamie Fornal. Jackie came back a little bit later in the practice part of our season. So she was even questionable about coming back this year. And, we've added a lot of talent this year, that's for sure.
Now, I was talking to Eric in terms of football sense. You lose Rachel to Chicago. Of all the teams, you lose to Chicago, which you probably will have to face in the playoffs. So you'll have to face your former quarterback at some point if everything goes well as planned here for you. But, you know, Rachel Wood has stepped in and haven't lost a beat yet. So you got to give credit to your coaching staff, I guess.
Well, I mean, Rachel's put in a lot of work over the last couple of years when Gore was here, starting for us. Wood has put in a lot of work in the off season. She came in ready and prepared. She's been about not turning the ball over, which is one thing that I stressed with her early this season. You know, just take care of the ball, protect the ball, don't make silly mistakes. And she's done a great job leading the offense for us, basically since she stepped on the field to take over the starting job again. She's done a fantastic job this year. So it's, you know, they're two different types of players. And I think had Gore stayed, that we probably would have run the offense a little bit differently than what we're running this year. But the great thing about it is that we can kind of manipulate it a little bit to fit each player's style, no matter who we have at quarterback. And Woods has just stepped right in and taken control. It's been really good to see.
Yeah, it seems like everybody's really been really good at that. We also want to thank you for helping our project. I know Edwina Brown was helping our project over with Todd, so we really appreciate you guys doing that for us and helping out our awareness project as well. So you have the talented Holly Custis, who comes from Portland, and you have some veteran leadership as well there on that roster still. So has that been helpful?
Yeah, it's having Holly come up here from the Phillies. I couldn't be happier to have her. She's a fantastic player, and one thing that doesn't get talked about a lot is the personalities of players. And I would say I don't think there's a player on our team that doesn't respect Holly as a player and as a person. Like, she's just that down to earth, that nice, that great of a leader. People have a lot of respect for her, but on and off the field. And she seems to have a calming influence, on the roster. It's been great. I mean, you can add leaders to teams that can be fiery, can be mean people. And we've certainly had some of those players in the past. And then you can add players like Holly, which are more we people. And that's exactly the kind of attitude our entire team has had this year. It's been fantastic. It's been really easy to coach them this year. And coming in as my first year as a head coach, it can be difficult to kind of buy into me being a head coach. But I've had nothing but support from the team and my assistant coaches. They've been great. I mean, we've had a really good year as far as our team being a family. It's been really cool.
Now, the impressive thing that I've noticed in the season that's been in place for 8 weeks is that Northwest Division is basically elevating itself to an elite division, and which is great to see because not everybody there is, sliding. Everybody is competitive every week in and week out. And I know that, a zero doesn't show much because a lot of people go, they got beat 56-0. But when you look at videotape, and Eric will attest to this as well, when you look at tape, it's a totally different ballgame than the scoreboard. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's I'm always really cautious about throwing the word elite around because, at the end of the day, not one of our teams in the region has won a championship yet. We haven't made it past the second round of the playoffs yet. So it's really difficult to call yourself an elite team when you haven't beaten the elites yet. I do think we're very competitive. I think we have the right mindset as a team to be able to hold ourselves up to that level. But until you beat the elite, I don't know that you can really call yourself that. And as far as the scores go, I would say that the Shockwave probably gave us our toughest test in the first half of the game this year. It took a little bit of time to kind of figure out what they were doing offensively and defensively to us that was different than what we had seen on film. And at that halftime, made some adjustments, and obviously that paid off because we ended up putting 26 up on the board in the second half. So in some ways it's gotten more competitive, and in some ways it hasn't. It's tough to see the Phillies slide back as much as they have. I have a lot of respect for their organization, their team, their players on their team. I wish they were having a better season than what they were. Obviously we would have had a game against the Falcons this year had they not departed to the IWFL. And that would have been a good challenge for us after taking a loss against them last year. And Tacoma stepped up their play this year. That was a really physical game for us. It took some special teams touchdowns, some defensive touchdowns to kind of help pull away. Those two parts of our team picked up for the offense sputtering a little bit in that game. And I think overall they've elevated themselves some, and some of the other teams have slid back a little bit as well. It happens, just the ebb and flow.
Yeah, I'm impressed a lot more with the trauma turnaround than anything else in that division because they've really tried to stay neck and neck with you throughout the whole season, through the 9 weeks. So I think it bodes well for them. Like you said, they're really staying competitive.
Yeah, the great thing about what's happened down there is that, it looks like they now have structure to what they are doing offensively and defensively, whereas in the past it may not have looked that way on film. You have players lining up in the right spots and doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're starting to be taught fundamentals, a little more detailed fundamentals, and that's showing up on the field. They're doing a better job. They've added some leadership from that left our team to go down and play for Tacoma. Vanessa Bryant's down there, or Vanessa Rodak, sorry. Renee Rodax down there. Tanisha, one of our offensive tackles, has gone down there. So they've, you know, they've added pieces that were veteran players from our team that can help kind of, you know, get people to be doing what they're supposed to be doing and get them in the right spots and teach them a little bit about, you know, how we played the game. And it's certainly paid off for them as an organization. I mean, they've certainly played a lot better on the field this year.
Now, Scott, we didn't talk about the historic initial pre-kickoff. You know, you had the Mexico facing yourselves and then Mexico facing Tacoma. How was that event for you when before the season even kicked off?
It was actually we have not done that in a number of years where we've played a game prior to our season beginning. I can tell you it was a lot of fun. It really was. Mexico was a lot of fun to play against. They were really good competitors for us. A lot of camaraderie that was on the field and respect for the game. It was a lot of fun to see, especially early. And we didn't know what to expect from them. I had seen a little bit of film from them from previous years, but we really didn't know what to expect, who their players were, you know, who played where on the field. I think our team played okay for that first game for the year. I think we've improved quite a bit, especially offensively, since that point. But our defense has kind of set the tone from the beginning of the year, and they played steady Eddie for the most part all season long.
Now, Scott, can you tell us a little bit of how that arrangement came about? Because they got a lot of players down in Mexico, and their league, the league that we follow in Mexico is at FXF Mexico, and they have some very good quality ball clubs down there as well. So that basically was a – it wasn't a national team, but it was a makeshift of some talented players from the whole leagues, right?
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't say that it was a national team, but it was, I guess, their all-star team, if you want to call it that, or what would be an all-star team for us up here. They actually contacted us because they played, I think it was the Austin team last year or the year before. They contacted us, said that they were coming up to Seattle. They wanted to play us, and I think it was originally scheduled to be Everett. Excuse me. And then somewhere along the way, it became Tacoma, and you know, they just said, "Hey, we want to come in. We want to play on. We want to play two games in 3 days, which is a daunting task." They came in. We played them on Friday night. They played Tacoma Sunday. I think it was morning or late morning. The problem what I felt bad for them about is that they lost some key players, I think, including our starting quarterback, if I remember correctly, in the game against us. I think she tore ACL or something of that effect. And then she obviously wasn't able to play against Tacoma. And yet they still came out, and it looked like they didn't miss a beat offensively-wise. It was a fun event. You know, to play an international team was really, really cool to be a part of, and I hope that we get to be a part of it again sometime.
Now, was that arranged through the league, or was it arranged just mutually between you and the sponsor, the team from Mexico at this point?
It was arranged. I think the league got involved after they had contacted us, if I remember correctly. I think they had planned a trip and said, "Hey, we're going to plan a trip up to Seattle. You know, are you guys interested in playing us if we come up there?" We said, "Absolutely, we'd love to do it." I would say the toughest part of it, at least for us, was to find a field that could host a game, two games in 3 days, to be able to do that. That was probably the most difficult task of everything on our part. But, the league ended up stepping in and getting involved after contacting us. And, they were fully supportive of us taking part in it.
Awesome. And Kishi or Eric, you guys? Kishi, you have any questions for Scott?
I do, actually. Scott, I wanted to know if this is a good place to announce the amazing news that I saw about the launch of your new TV website. Or can you give us a little more feedback and information about that? I mean, that's amazing, and I think that that's probably going to be very helpful
in spreading the word about women's football and getting the word out there, and as well as getting the ladies some more exposure. So can you give us some more information about that?
Yeah, one of the things I won't do is I mean, I'm not going to divulge who I'm working with on it right now. Just, you know, they've asked to kind of stay in the background, and that's understandable for the moment. But, you know, I got together with some people to have a conversation about how we improve broadcasts of the league, getting notoriety out about the elite level play in the league. You know, one thing that is really disappointing for me as a coach is that, you know, I can watch whatever team I want to on our website. And, I can watch whatever team I want through our website. And, you know, fans around the country don't get that same opportunity because a lot of the games aren't broadcast. And so when I sat down and started having a conversation with some business partners, it became very obvious that the thing that we needed to do was to figure out a way how to get games broadcast nationally for elite level competition. And that's really the key is the elite level competition. You're not going to see, you know, second tier teams, third tier teams involved in this venture. And I mean, no disrespect by that to those teams, but we really need to start showcasing, you know, the upper echelon teams that, that should be getting more notoriety than what they are nationally. You know, a team like DC and a team like Boston, you know, they get notoriety within their city. Boston's gotten some notoriety nationally. But at the end of the day, you know, have teams like San Diego, Central Cal, us, the Utah Falcons, on and on and on, the Dallas Elite. Those kinds of teams should be getting more national attention than what they are. And, you know, so it took probably a good month and a half. It took like a good month and a half to sit down, figure out, you know, how are we going to do it, who are we going to work with, what game were we going to start with, and then start to put the pieces in play. We found a webcast team to work with out in the D.C. area that has been fantastic to deal with. They're going to put on a great show. Everything that we've seen so far from a production standpoint is going to look like a top-notch broadcast for that game. So there's a lot of really good things going on there. You know, and if it ends up working out from a viewership standpoint, I think our hope would be that we take a look at doing this multiple times next year to showcase some elite-level team matchups and see where it takes us.
Well, I know that, you know, being here in the D.C. area, I think that it's going to be amazing. And I think that, you know, you're right, the D.C. Divas definitely deserve some exposure. I mean, I guess they're a name and people are aware of who they are, but having this opportunity to elevate exposure to ladies football, I think, is definitely going to be critical to the success of the sport. And I think that that awareness definitely happens through expanded media outlets. So congratulations. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, one of the things that my partners and I have talked about is that at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that are standing around talking about stuff. You know, hey, we'd like to do this, we'd like to do that. But people have to start doing. And, you know, it's going to take some investment by people. It might take personal investment by people to make it happen. But if they want to see the sport change and grow and viewership increase and national attention increase, it's time to start taking steps like this. And, you know, I don't want to say that I'm the first person to think about it. I actually wasn't. Somebody came to me and said, what do you think about this? And how do we get it going? I thought it was a great idea, and then it just took some, you know, figuring out from a football standpoint, how do we get it done? But I hope that more people start to step forward and support something like this, because at the end of the day, it's for the teams. It's for the players. And if we can't get team support and we can't get player support on something like this, which I think will grow once they see the broadcast, once they see how cool the broadcast is going to be, then I think people will get really, really excited about it. But if they can't buy into that, then quite honestly, there's not a lot of hope for the leagues to stay alive, for the game to stay alive long term. If the sport can't even support themselves, the players can't even support the game itself from that standpoint, it's going to be challenging. It's going to be really challenging. And a lot of people are afraid to say that, but it's true. It really is true.
Now, Scott, let me just intervene here. Everybody, you know, mocks the Legends Football League, you know, for the attire and everything else. But we have to give them credit. And you know, as much as some people don't like Mitchell Mortaza, you have to give him credit for being a rebel in a sense that has put the league front and center in a visibility where maybe it's not traditional women's football, but it is women's football in the long sense, but it is also on YouTube, and it is now on national television. So to your point, yes, he has, I can tell you internally from information that I know, he has weathered financial storms in the last six seasons just to keep it on television and to keep it going in terms of arena capabilities and financial issues. So, yes, that has to be worked out, because if it isn't worked out, like you said, there is no need to start it. You have to start it with a passion that is going to work out, and you basically have to sacrifice some financial. So the top-tier teams is a good start. I mean, that's the best thing you can say, is that you have to put, like you said, the elite, if not whatever is known as the elite in your league, top six teams, top eight teams, whatever, is a stepping stone, which I applaud everybody that is behind the scenes that is doing that. And to your point, they have to somehow buy into it in a long-term facet, because it isn't going to be just 1 year that needs to make it happen. Partnerships are built over time, and viewership is built over, like you said, a good broadcast.
Yeah, it's like I said, I mean, we've seen some stuff that the broadcast team has done in other outlets, and then of course some of the things that we've seen from a pre-production broadcast standpoint. It's going to be really, really cool, and you know, my partners and I are really super excited about being a part of it, seeing it start to take shape, and ultimately, you know, I know that there's going to be some apprehension about you know, oh, this is just another guy that's just trying to get his name out there and, you know, be the kind of point person for women's football. That's not what I'm trying to do. And that's not what my partners are trying to do. We're trying to advance the game. We're not asking for notoriety as individuals. We're trying to advance the game. And at the end of the day, that's what we care about, is making sure that the game gets advanced. And we think that, you know, having a web broadcast is just the start. This first one is just the start. We hope that it comes off as a success, and that, you know, down the road, could it lead to a game of the week type thing for women's football? You never know. But this is a small step in that direction, and we hope that the players and the fans and the teams come out and support the broadcast. I know the only downside to it, which was a little bit of a disappointment, and we understand why, but is that the time of the game couldn't get moved so that more teams could see the broadcast. But I understand there's challenges with that for teams in the league, and you know, that it was a bump in the road, and ultimately I think that we'll still get viewership out of it, even if it's after the fact. So
now, Scott, if you're known as the Al Davis of this league for the long term in terms of the history, I guess we'll have to applaud you.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's critical, though.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. No, it's okay. I'm not an I guy, Oscar. I never have been. And doing this is not about, hey, I want to get out in front and center and be in front of it. That's not what this is about. This is more about, I think that the game needs to take a step forward. And there's a lot of people that are talking about, hey, we should do this and we should do that, but nobody's doing anything about it. So I think being able to do this from a national standpoint is key. And you know, it just felt like the right time to make it happen. So I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I'm lucky to be a part of it.
Well, I agree. And again, like I said, one of the issues with women's football has to do with lack of exposure. So if this is another media outlet that can create that publicity, then why not? There are a lot of TV shows that are turning to the web, to the internet. I mean, look at Netflix, you know, and the TV shows that are coming down. So it's actually a really good idea to get in on this at this point in time. Plus, the ability to watch the games on the web makes the game mobile too. And so in that aspect,
yeah,
you don't have to say, oh,
yeah,
I got to be home by I-5 or I got to be home by, you know, or oh, the game's coming on it. Guess what? You can watch it on your phone, on your whatever type of mobile device that you have, your laptop, your, you know, whatever. And that way you can still watch the games live. And it gives, again, more opportunity for exposure and an increase of awareness. And I think that these ladies work too hard to not get the recognition and the credit they deserve. And Oscar, speaking to your point about the LFL, I think that you're right. He's done a really good job of getting it some national exposure, because I was having a whole different conversation with some friends, you know, about the game. And of course, it was really interesting because the males were on one side of it and the females were on the other. And of course, my female friends, who a lot of them are diehard sports fans, of course, were like totally turned off by the outfits, whereas the guys were like, okay, the outfits may have gotten me here, but now I'm actually watching for the game. And I think that that part, that last statement, is what's getting lost in translation. And it's, you know, somewhat impacting, you know, how well the game is being received universally, whereas football is received universally, male football is received universally. But I think that this is another really great outlet, a great opportunity. And there's nothing wrong with being proud of, you know, being a part of this movement. I think that it's something that is needed, and that's why I was like, when I read about it, I was like, oh, I have to ask God about this, you know, when he comes on the show today. So I have to give you kudos and congratulations.
Yeah, I mean, it's I would say I'm just happy that it's taken hold as well as it has already. You know, this when we first started talking about this, I think it was maybe a month and a half or 2 months ago. You know, it's like, okay, maybe we can make it happen next year. And the more and more we talked about it, the more and more it became a no. We need to figure out how to make this happen now. And and it just, I mean, it couldn't set up any better for us from a game standpoint than having selected D.C. and Boston as the inaugural game to be broadcast on it, a rematch of a game that came down to the wire from the first game. You have Boston beating Chicago 2 weeks ago. I mean, it just set up for two heavyweight teams battling it out again, and we couldn't be any more excited to be a part of that and showcasing it to the nation. That part of it is really going to be super fun to see. I actually can't wait.
Hey, Eric, you got anything
really excited
Scott?
For that game.
Yeah, I do recall some years back I was able to see part of a game. It was, I believe it was Pittsburgh. I think it was, I forget if they're the Pittsburgh Passion, or I know it was a team from Pittsburgh. They were playing a championship game on Heinz Field. Has there been any thought as far as, you know, trying to get in contact with people to find out how that was done and how you guys might be able to take that step?
Yeah, that's, I mean, quite honestly, that was really done through some connections with the Pittsburgh Passion organization itself. It certainly helped that Pittsburgh was involved in that game. Yeah, Eric, I mean, believe me, it would be really easy to go to a broadcast station like, you know, ESPN and say, hey, we'd really like you to broadcast our games. Well, okay, they'll turn right around and say, great, that'll be $30,000 for us to put everything in place and blah, you know. It just, that's not going to happen. There's no financial wherewithal to be able to make something like that happen now or on a regular basis. And, you know, when we came through with this this webcast idea, we wanted it to be something that could be repeated over and over and over again, both from a broadcast setup and a financial setup. And we think we've gotten to a point where we can make that happen on a weekly basis going forward in the future. I mean, a lot of it is predicated upon how well this plays out. I don't mean the game, but I mean the broadcast itself. Do people tune in? Do people get excited about it? Are they helping promote the game? If they're not, then it makes it really difficult for us to turn around and say, okay, we're going to fork out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to make these kinds of games happen every week next year. Is it going to be worth it? I think that's ultimately why it's really important for us to be able to show the nation and potential investors, potential people interested in marketing sponsorships, is to be able to show that that viewership is there, that that interest is there. We'll see how it plays out.
Now, Scott, is the WFA involved in any of this internal arrangements, or is this more of a outside the league arrangement?
No, this is a completely separate thing between myself and the group that I'm involved in. We have no direct relationship with the WFA on this specific venture. And quite honestly, this is, for me as an individual, it's completely separate from my organization, the Majestics. I'm just a person in this deal that is a fan of the game that wants to see it advance. And I've purposely left my organization out of it, out of being involved with this venture, because I didn't want there to be a conflict of interest as far as that goes.
Now, at this point, is there any conversation? I mean, we're going back into a little details, but is there been any conversation at this point on how the league can participate in some sort of financial support for you to, like you said, it's going to take a little bit of money to work with it, even if you do two games next year or whatever, two friendlies, as most of the soccer leagues do anyways. I mean, so this would be considered more in that realm that soccer does, which is basically doing friendlies and competitive matches.
Yeah, I'll answer it this way, Oscar. I would say that I think there's still a lot for us to determine in terms of how that part of it is going to play out. First things first is we have to see how the broadcast event goes to begin with. And if it becomes something that, you know, a lot of people are tuning into, or a lot of people are even watching post the event actually taking place live, then I think that there'll be some discussions between our group and the various leagues about how to make it happen on a more regular basis, and where potential financial support would come into play. I don't think we know that answer just yet.
Right.
So I think that'll, ask me that question in a couple months, and I'll probably have a little bit better answer for you.
Yeah, and the exciting thing is, like you said, it's an actual spark, and that's the positive out of everything. It's a spark. Now, you know, we will see next week. I mean, you have DC on a very good high. I mean, I don't know if they're really 8-0 because they've forfeited a couple games, but I'm pretty sure they're 6-0, if not 5-0. But other than that, they're undefeated. And to your point, to the previous weeks, we have seen competitive football that come down the stretch and come down the line. So, if it's the same result that we saw previous weeks, now on an actual broadcast, I think people will be hooked.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And I think an even greater piece will be that, you know, individual players will be showcased, you know, with player interviews. We're going to have two sideline reporters involved, one on each side of the field. So there'll be a sideline person there for DC, a sideline person there for Boston. We're going to have somewhere between 5 and 7 cameras, depending upon setup at the field. Once they get there, we'll have all those different angles available. Replay, instant replay will be available. The list goes on and on and on of things things that are going to be a part of this broadcast. It's going to be a first time for step forward for a game of this magnitude. I really hope that people get excited about it, even if they're apprehensive to start, that they get excited about it after watching it, and want to help get this thing going. Because I think that the game is ready for it. The appetite is there. Every team and player that we talk to is like, man, this is needed. The sport needs this. How do we make it happen? So, not now. We'll see. Once the game takes place, we'll see if the support is really there.
Yeah. The good thing is, like I said, you have it going and it's a spark. The other suggestion I would say is a constant rebroadcast. It would be so easy just to put a YouTube channel up, and you'd get some revenue off of that as well. So if you've never thought about that, it's pretty simple to put a YouTube channel up and actually upload the broadcast so that, like in Kichi's point earlier, people can just pretty much view it on the go and on demand whenever they want. And that will also get you more viewers and more viewership, because that's another avenue to present to future investors and say, sure, the game was this, and this is how much the viewership was initially for the game, but look how many hits it's gotten on, social media or online. So that's another avenue for that.
Yeah, we may end up, again, that's one of those things that will probably be a down the road discussion. Once we see the broadcast, once we see the game play out, once we see viewership, I think that'll start answering a lot more questions for us that we have. Right now it started as an idea. We knew what we wanted from a broadcast standpoint. We knew what kind of game, meaning in terms of the matchup itself, we knew what kind of matchup we wanted. And I think there are still some questions about, where's the viewership going to play out at? What's the potential sponsorship intake from it long term? What's the potential financial support from the leagues, the teams? Is that there? I think we'll know a lot more of those answers after the game, and then we can start kind of piecing things together and really, really make it, play out for hopefully next year. I mean, hopefully this one game is a springboard into something much bigger next year, and I think it would be really, really cool if it ends up happening.
All I can tell you is I can give you, a attaboy, because, reality is this. That matchup, that game that you're scheduling right now, you have two elite quarterbacks. You have Hamlin and Cahill. Cahill with championship, rings. Hamlin with tenure. And then you also have a lot of Team USA members on both sides, on the Diva and the Renegades. So the level of play should be amazing.
Yeah, and you know what, Oscar, is what gets lost in a lot of this is that those players are really neat people. And I think it'll be really neat to see people interviewing those players on the sidelines pregame, their faces getting out in front. I mean, these guys are Team USA players. They played for our national team. They should be getting more exposure than what they are. And I hope that showcasing them in this fashion allows for that to happen. Could it be a spark? It certainly could, and I think that's what we're all hoping that are involved with the project.
Great. Scott, I know you're on a high 8-0. Do you think you're going to be tossed over in the next couple weeks, or do you feel like your run is pretty legit for the playoff run?
Right now, the way it's set up, I don't believe we can get knocked out of the playoffs, even if we were to lose to Portland this next weekend. And I believe the way it's going to play out is we'll have the Shockwave next week to end the regular season. And then our first round matchup looks like it will be against the Tacoma Trauma. Who knows? I mean, that game, the score was, the gap between the scores was wide, but I would say that the game was a lot closer than four indicated. And Tacoma was also, you know, the only team to put up 18 points on us, 17 points on us this year. So, you know, that's going to be a tough matchup for us in the first round of the playoffs. And if we're lucky to advance, we'll probably wind up playing San Diego, Pacific, or Central Cal. I think it's Pacific and San Diego as of right this minute. And we'd end up having to travel to play one of those two teams. So, you know, our road's only going to get harder. And I would just say that there's no other team in this country I would want to coach than the team that I have. The personalities on our team are such that it's a really tight-knit family feel. You know, as individuals, they've overcome a lot, and they've been there to support each other, which has not always been the case. You know, I'm sure that this happens all around the country. But we have a really special group of players, and I'm really, really excited to see how far they can take it this year. You know, I would say I think we can compete with anybody nationally. I don't know that makes us elite, but there isn't one person on our team that isn't afraid or is afraid to step out on the field with the heavyweights in the league. And I think we feel like we can compete with anyone.
Okay, so Scott, at this point, it's a good sign that you are going to be in the mix, and maybe at this point, you know, no stumbles. And we wish you well because, like, you know, like we talked about earlier with your roster, an amazing group at this point, and they've done everything they could up to 9 weeks to stay in contention. And now they're going to be, like you said, the playoffs is a new season to begin with anyway. So it's sort of once you get through this hurdle, it's another hurdle to go through. But San Diego, to your point before, Cal, Central Cal, you got Dallas who's playing really well, Chicago on the other side, Boston, D.C., and we, you know, I've basically praised Cleveland because Cleveland the last 2 years has really turned around their program, and they've done really well to stay in contention, playoffs before that, and then before the year before that. So there's some quality ball clubs. They're going to be in the playoffs in the WFA this year, and it's going to be exciting to, you know, to watch at the same time to kind of witness the road to the national championship, which is in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I do think that. You know, the scores week in and week out, I think there's been a wider gap between the winning teams and the losing teams this year than in the previous 4 or 5 seasons, which, you know, would kind of indicate to you that there are the haves and the have-nots. And I think once we get into the playoffs, I don't mean us, but I mean just once the leagues start to get into the playoffs, I think you'll start to see the halves battle it out with the other halves, and then you'll be able to determine who the elite teams are in the leagues. Until then, you know, you can watch film. As a coach, I could watch film and say, yeah, that team's an elite team. To look at scores week in and week out, if you were to judge it just based off that, I'd say it's kind of a crapshoot from that standpoint.
Yeah, that's the reason I'm saying it's like, you know, separate the girls from the women, and you know, once the playoffs come in, we got the women coming in to play the ball, so yeah, the two teams will rise at that point. So, Scott, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. I know you were busy this weekend and you made some time for us. We truly appreciate it. You're always welcome back. Always to talk to you. It's always amazing. We wish you well in the ventures, anything we can do to help you to support your cause and to raise the awareness, you know, you got our support, and we wish you well with the Majestics. Now, anybody can get tickets, the SeattleMajestics.com for the final home game, right?
Yep. Actually, our final home game was last weekend, so we're on the road at the Portland Shockwave this next weekend, and then if the season were to have ended today, we would be playing a home game in the first round of the playoffs. Obviously, we still have one more week to go, but we would have a home game in the first round of the playoffs. And so, yeah, people could get tickets to that, and we'll be able to get tickets to that once that has been determined that we'll have a home game in the first round. So it's exciting. Obviously, you know, I love coming on. I thank you guys for having me. Obviously, you guys can tell I have a lot of passion about the game. I believe in the game and the players. I just want to see the women get the notoriety that they deserve, you know, that the men get. And, you know, I'm just happy to be a part of a step forward for the game, because it's been needed.
Yeah, we agree. So at this point, like I said, if we can do anything to help you, support in any way, we're more than welcome to, all three of us here, and trying to spread the word out and get, and our D.C. Representative here, she's more than happy to, you know, work with you in terms of anything you need in that area as well, because she's an amazing person, and that's why we have her on as well. So
awesome.
Thank you.
We'll
thank
see
you,
you. next week on the road, and then hopefully we will be talking Scott McCarron and the Majestics in the playoffs, the first round.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be nice. Be nice to get into the playoffs once again and see where we go. It's always exciting when the end of the regular season comes and you're looking into the playoffs and, you know, seeing who you're going to battle up against next, who the challenge is going to be against. And I'm excited about our group this year.
Awesome.
Well, I'm
so, Scott, enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and don't work too hard out there, and make sure you get that beer that I was talking about earlier, because you'll probably need that cold one.
I'm on my way to have one right now, actually.
Awesome. Safe travels, my man. Thank you again, and we're going to be looking forward to seeing the Majestics in the playoffs picture, and then hopefully we'll bring you back in terms of once the playoffs starts and see how you think and the perspectives are going to be for predictions. So it'll be great to see.
Yeah.
Great to hear you again.
Yeah, anytime. I'll see
and
you guys.
Thanks for coming
you guys
on the
can...
show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Scott.
I love doing
Safe
it.
Travels.
Thanks. Yep, thanks for the support, guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So that was the amazing Scott McCarron, owner and coach of the undefeated Seattle Majestics of the WFA, and venturing out. And we talked about this on this show before, you guys. This sport needs to get to a level, as Nkeshi was saying earlier, we got to bring the more awareness of it. But the people behind the scenes, to Scott's point, people don't know who these players are. And that's really what our project's all about. And not to take the limelight from his interview, but, you know, our project is in that sense. We need to showcase the elite players, not just in the U.S. League, but internationally as well.
Right.
But let's focus on the U.S. League for now. But the U.S. League is a front runner, because USA football is basically the birth of American football.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to showcase, we talked about earlier, you know, the amazing players, the quarterbacks in this league, the running backs, the tackles, the offensive linemen, the special teams. But, you know, you can go through the stat sheet at the WFA, WFAfootball.com. You can go to the stat sheet at IWFLsports.com, and you see these names. Oh, let me just throw it out there for Eric Brown. Well, it's just a name on a sheet of paper with some numbers. So, really, to Scott's point, we need to put that sheet of paper on a viewership mode so that people understand the, you know, the effort that this person has put in, the time, the contribution to the squad, and the end result of the record. You know, just like we're passionate about NFL game day on Sunday, and we talk about, you know, in TCU we talk about Dez Bryant, we talk about Tony Romo, and all that. With the same token, this is what needs to be done with this sport.
Absolutely.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, and we don't, because the reality is that people not only get behind teams. I mean, I know I'm a perfect example of that. For years, I was a diehard Michael Jordan fan. So therefore, I was a Bulls fan for many years. When he came to D.C., I then became a Wizards fan. Not because I was, you know, and I grew up here, but I was never emotionally invested in the team until Michael Jordan became part of the team. Now, after Jordan left, I said, well, I can either chase him around or I can just stick to my team, and I'm here, and let me just root for the home team. And now I honestly am a legitimate diehard, you know, Washington Wizards fan. However, that's not how I started out. And I grew up here, you know, or once, you know, moved here when I was a kid because my dad was military, but, you know, pretty much been here all my life since the age of 3. So for me to have to wait until Michael Jordan became, you know, a member of the team for me to start loving them, you know, that speaks volumes that I was a person follower. So So there are a lot of people like that. So if we can create that interest and create that awareness in these ladies and start telling their stories, then that I definitely think would help benefit the game.
Yeah, and that's the key right now. I think the bottom line is Eric's in Texas, and I can tell you personally from my networking in Texas, there's amazing women in Texas. I mean, there's the Sugar and Spice Football League. There's the WFA teams in Texas, the IWFL teams in Texas, the Arlington Impact, the Dallas Elite. There's a lot of football being played by women, especially in the big state of Texas as primarily. But with the emphasis is there's no faces behind it. And that's where our project has really made an impact. I mean, we have made a stride, a small stride, we made an impact, and just to Scott's point, behind the scenes, there's a lot of things that need to happen to fall into place for something to make an impact. And first and foremost, since I started covering women's gridiron, that was the first thing that I said to everybody. Okay, this is a sport that you tell me that this is a passionate sport, that these players give in their time, their devotion, and all that stuff, but we don't know them. We don't know who they are. We have no clue what they look like. We have no idea what they can do. Because once, to Eric's point, once you see them on film, it's totally different because now you can relate to them on film. You know, the
right.
Personality, the drive, the passion and everything else. And you know that, Eric. I mean, you can speak to it. I mean, you can see a player in training camp. But until they, you can know their personality, you can know everything, but until they convert that piece of it and join it with the on-field play, you really have no idea what this person is capable of on both sides of the spectrum, which is on the off-field end and on the infield.
Yeah, exactly. And if there is a way that, like you were saying earlier, we probably have to start, through social media. But if there is a way that, we can start documenting video-wise, as far as what goes on behind the scenes, all the training, the sacrifice, the ups and downs, the pain that goes into it, the joy that comes from the sacrifice. If there's a way that each player can be showcased, that will definitely, get people's eyes. Because to a lot of people, it just seems like, it's just something that that these women just want to do just to be like the men or just to have something to pass the time. And they are taken away from, wait a minute, this woman's got passion. These women really love this game. They don't get paid for it. They don't have, millions of dollars in endorsements. They're out there because they love the game. So, whatever we can do to, bring more of a spotlight to them, show people, what it's like for them to get to the point that they're at, I think that would, a lot of people would appreciate that, and they can relate to those people.
Yeah, and that's where I was telling Scott before off air that it's really a matter of contribution. And if you can go to every football player in this country, both leagues included, and if you can pry a dollar from them, if you have to pry a dollar from them, okay, then that, we got an issue already. Because if you tell them, hey, I need this to make this happen, and can you contribute? It's a sacrifice already. You've already sacrificed to put some money into the season. Now it's another sacrifice to get it to another level. And I know it sounds like you can't do that because obviously people have other things in mind. Sure, of course. But what the problem is that it takes money to showcase something, and ultimately revenue has to be acquired in order for you to make some sort of impact. And we all know that. It's a fact of life. That's what it is. We're not going to sit there. It's harder, as we talked about in the past, it's a lot harder to filter a 53-man roster cross-country than it is to filter, what the LFL does with the 20-man roster. It's a lot harder, way harder, and
yeah.
I understand that. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy. I understand that. But with the same token, you have to get to a level, like Scott said. Do you want to showcase the elite players in this league? So that means you have to be selective about who these elite teams are. It's no different. If you take the WFA and the IWFL to join forces today, and I can bet you right now, we can take 10 teams from both leagues and they're on elite level on both sides of the equation, and we can put together an NFL style league, because you can just do it in a sense where you're only scheduling, like he said, you're putting and showcasing only the elite teams in those leagues, and now you have what they call, you know, premiership. It's the same thing that soccer does in England, same thing that they do in rugby. It's the same concept. The only difference is somebody willing to do it, and that's where these two leagues have not come to the conclusion that you can have 60 teams across the country, but if you're not showcasing the best teams in your league to an elevated level, nobody knows and nobody cares. And it's hard to say that, but that's really where we're at. Nobody knows. And then at some point, no caring, no viewership, no caring. Look at the NBA, in case you take, we'll go back to, you know, the early 80s. You know, the NBA mm-hmm. in the early 70s was nothing until CBS started showing them on midnight, at midnight.
Yeah.
And then it evolved from there.
Right.
No, you're absolutely right. Well, so I'm going to address the pink elephant in the room, which is
sure.
that in as much as we've been to say, oh, it's sexist, what I love about Gridiron Beauties is that it does put a feminine attractive spin on the ladies. Now, let me justify my statement in that before someone says, oh, you guys don't have to be good looking and da-da-da. No, that's not true. There is some objectification of the male athletes as well. And, actually how I ended up with my Twitter handle is because that was one of the things that I used to do was I used to write for, a female sports site, and my category was Kishi's Cuties. And what I would do is profile the good-looking men of the NFL, because what I was doing was targeting the casual female football fan, or that female who sits there at the couch because she has to, because that's what her husband wants, and she clearly is indifferent to the sport, but now I've given her a reason to actually look male because, oh, I know that guy. That's that guy that she wrote about, and he's cute, and he plays this position. And because I also include stats and statistics and actual information about him, you know, if it was a quarterback or whatever their position was, whatever their achievements and accomplishments were. So now they're sitting on the couch, and a name pops up that they recognize. And what I was doing was not so much objectifying the athletes, but creating recognition for the less than diehard fan. And it's okay for the women's football to be able to do the same thing and to be able to say, hey, you know what? Look at me. I'm the star of this team. Or let's look at this person. They're the star of this team. And they look like this. And they have these stats and this stats and the other stats. And I'm just going to put the pink elephant in the room. Ladies, it's okay to wear lipstick once or twice. It's okay to wear lipstick once or twice. Tom Brady is Tom Brady. But guess what? He's also known because he's the hot guy in the ads. You know?
I can tell you from feedback that we get on our social platforms, and we talked about this off air before, okay?
Right.
Our Instagram site is one of the most praised sites. I get praises every single day because I get every single day I get a submission that says, I want to be on that gallery. I want to represent my team on that gallery. I want to be able to tell somebody that American football is played in Warsaw. American football is played in the UK. American football is played in Germany. It's played in Guam. It's played in Australia. And to me, that's literally what we're putting up there. We're putting a player of high caliber output, but in a feminine sense, but at the same time within their realm of their sport. And now somebody can go there and say, wow, a Lauren Evans of Queensland, Australia, wow, I need to go see what Lauren Evans is all about. And Lauren Evans is a competitive quarterback for the GC Stingrays. And guess what? Somebody's going to be inclined to go attend a game because of what they saw in an image. And to your point, that is exactly what we're doing. We're trying to draw attention to the fact that these players play football. They're just not, you know, nice looking on a photo. They play real football. And the bottom line is, until you come to see them, to Eric's point, you're not going to see the passion, the sweat, the struggle, and the end result of their play. I mean, their caliber. Like, the stat sheet doesn't say anything. The numbers are true, but we don't have a face and we don't have a relationship with them. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build that relationship. And with our apparel brand, we do that. We showcase somebody and we're saying, our apparel brand is basically saying, this person is a badass. Just let you know. And this person plays American football. And so
exactly. That's
our statement with their apparel brand. With our galleries and platforms, you know, we are trying to showcase an awareness that there is American football globally, not just in America, but it is globally in Canada. It's in Europe. It's in every facet of the corner. And the game, and you know, and I know, and Eric knows, and we've played the game. The game is more than just the game. It teaches you values. It teaches you how to overcome things. It also teaches you, how to be in a team mindset, to care.
Mm-hmm.
One goal, one mind. There's a lot of things that draw from the sport that people don't realize. And as women, it's a bigger hurdle, but at the same time, it can be overcome. But we have to be strategic about it. And we also have to, understand, like Scott said, we have to plant the seeds that kickstart something on a fire.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it has to be started. And that's why I'm so proud to be a part of, this program.
Yeah, and people like him and other people involved that are behind the scenes need to be applauded and praised for their efforts. Because, you've been in PR in Kishi. You know, it takes thousands of hours and efforts and partnerships and networking, and it takes a lot of work.
Absolutely.
To try to create a goal and end goal. So the bottom line is we applaud everybody behind the scenes that's going to make this happen, this broadcast, and we'll continue to support everybody. Last night, Eric, I don't know if you got to see it. We'll switch gears here before we take off because we've got 15 minutes, and then obviously the NBA Game 2 should be on at some point here, and then we got to let Nkeshi go because as a fanatic, I understand her passion. So,
no, not just a fanatic. I actually have a Twitter chat that I'm co-hosting about. I'm co-hosting a live Twitter chat about the game.
Are you really?
DC live chat. I am. I'm co-hosting a live Twitter chat. So I already told my co-host, I was like, hey, you guys, go ahead and start the chat without me. But of course, my radio show comes first. So I'm not just a fanatic of the game, even though I did play basketball for 3 years. It's one of my other many sports professional coverage responsibilities that just show how much I'm putting in my groundwork and paying my dues because I love
sports. And
you've
done an amazing job. I have to applaud you. You've been such an amazing asset to our show and then obviously to myself. A lot of knowledge. I've learned a lot from you in terms of, other things off air, but overall, you've been a bit.
Oh, my God. You
not
guys
that
are,
Eric
you
not
guys
that Eric
are
has
amazing.
That you have.
Right. No,
sorry,
actually,
Eric,
can I just say that I love
you or anything.
No, Eric is, oh my God, you guys are all amazing. But from you to Erica to Eric, you guys are so great. I love being a part of this show. I'm constantly telling everybody, how much I love it because, one, I'm learning because in as much as I love football, I knew of the DC Divas. And as I'm saying, they were a name. They are a name here in the area. But the issue is nobody ever knows where they're playing, when they're playing. So it's kind of, that impacts the support side of things. But, just being a part of everything and just learning so much from you guys and especially from Eric from having actually played and then, his time, so it's just like amazing what you guys know and your sports knowledge. Plus, we all have different thoughts and opinions on things, so it's really cool to have the diversity of how we see different sports-related situations.
And I will have to say and give you credit, I will have to say thank you, BJ Coletta, for giving me the opportunity to start this and to continue to promote the sport of women's gridiron. Without her giving me the opportunity to be a guest, I would not be here today, and this would not be where we're at today. So, hats off to her, and she knows how much I love her and care for her, and she's done a great job with doing that, and I appreciate her giving me the opportunity as well. So, at this point, it's been great to hear that, things are going to progress forward. And we've covered this for the last 4 years. And to this point, I don't think we've had, more excitement than we have now. And it's going to be a great opportunity for the playoffs and not just talking about the WFA, but the IWFL as well, and all their ventures and stuff. So it really, it just boils down to us understanding what the sport needs and how we can support it on our end. And then in the background, like to Scott's point, you know, they're doing certain intricate things that are going to get the sport front and center. Eric, you know, we talked about, you know, I always say it, you can mock Mitchell Mortaza for a lot of things, but you're not going to be able to mock Mitchell Mortaza for putting, you know, these women front and center on television, on MTV2 and now on Fuse TV. And it takes a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he's lost a lot of money over time, over the 6 years, and he's still somehow been able to come up with some sort of revenue to put it out there. So in reality, yeah, you can mock him for everything else, you know, non-broadcasting, but to put it up there on a high viewership, you got to give him credit, and hopefully the WFA, Scott's venture here, will do the same for traditional women's football, and it would be great.
Well, also the fact that when you watch one of the LFL broadcasts, I mean, it really sounds like a professionally done broadcast. They don't sound like amateurs. So, you know, if, say, the WFA is able to do something like that, you know, if they can keep in mind to, you know, really have someone that when they – if they get to a television broadcast, make sure it's something that's, you know, really professional, really put together and polished, and that also helps as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the key right there. Like you said, if it's shoddy and if it's not going to look right, people are not going to take it serious. They're going to turn it off right away, especially in this day and age where we're so inundated with, you know, choices and options and apps. And, oh, my God, I was talking to my niece yesterday, and she's like, you know, do you have an app for that? And I'm like, get off the app mode for the rest of the world here. We don't have an app for everything. Brush my teeth. Do I need an app to brush my teeth? I don't think so.
I hate apps. I hate
that's
app.
What the kids
I
think today.
App.
We have an app for everything.
I hate apps. It's only because apps want access to things that are irrelevant to the app. If I need an app to brush my teeth, you do not need to know my contact list, because everybody on my contact list does not need to know, hey, Keisha brushed her teeth. Or you do not need to see pictures of my need to have access to my pictures. Why? What are you doing with access to my pictures, you creep? I have my kids on here. I don't know who's on the other end of your app.
Exactly. It's just a little extreme, that's all. We live in a sort of like a crazy world where we get a little too round down into all these little things. But, you know, the thing we got to take away today, I think, overall is just, there's efforts being made behind the scenes to really showcase the sport. And we talked about earlier, to really showcase the individuals and to get the fans to know the faces and how these women have strived for a long time. The elite players on these teams, and we've interviewed them before, you know, we interviewed Jeanette Gray, we've interviewed Collie Bronson, we've interviewed Sammy Grassoffi. We've interviewed all these players before over a voice level, but never sat, you know, never saw them, you know, live or anything like that. But even then, it still gave us some sort of avenue to understand them. You know, we interviewed Sammy Grassoffi and her struggles from the beginning, you know, from a young girl playing on a boys team and then going into transitioning into, you know, her gender, and then going from her gender to the elite level of a national scene, which is to the world championships, and to scale on to the first world women's championship in 2010. I mean, you know what I mean? It's historic. And so this is what we need to do. I think this is the moment, to Scott's point. This game, hopefully, cross our fingers, this game will be historic. And that way it's going to be a classic and something that you can view. And Eric, you know, and I know as football fans, you know, a 0-0 classic nobody likes, but a 0-0 classic is true football in its purest sense.
Right.
Well,
so we're going to get out of here and try to come in next week. Next week, I think I should be able to do the board next week. I will let you know during the week, but at this point, I really appreciate you and Keisha taking care of the board for us today. Eric, thanks again. Happy to talk to you once again. I appreciate you contributing to our program, being with us. I know Erica here from the quote-unquote Evil Empire is not here this week, but she will be back in about 2 weeks. So we will have her back just to make sure that you know that. She's coming back. She's not leaving. And so we'll be talking Patriots, of course, as we always do when she's here. And so Dallas, I will leave you on a note. Dallas transitioning to a better team. I read some things about how Tony Romo is strictly to football and no hobbies. So I guess that's a good sign for you and your Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Franchising tag, Dez Bryant, probably not a good thing, but, hey, it's what it is. It's what it's going to be. We were going to talk about the top 100, but we got so passionate about Scott and talking women's gridiron that kind of literally ran out of time here. So we'll do that next week as well. So we'll probably run what are they at right now, the 70? They're already down in the 70s or something like that from the top 100?
I think they're in the 50s
sure.
now, I think.
Oh, in the 50s now? So, yeah, we'll have some time to kind of dissect 50 players, I guess. So next week we'll kind of pinpoint a couple of players that we feel maybe weren't on the right number. But, you know, who are we? We're not that experts yet, but we are, technically we are. So we'll do that next week.
Well, I will say one thing that we have to address really quickly because it's just critical, groundbreaking sports news, and we cannot call ourselves a sports radio show if we do not address it. Congratulations to America Ferrell for becoming the first horse in 37 years, I think it is, to win the Triple Crown. That is just absolutely positively
that
amazing.
Is huge
I know
news.
Every year
huge.
We've been waiting, and congratulations to Victor Espinoza, who was the rider for America Ferrell, and this is his third attempt to ride a horse to Triple Crown. So I guess third time really is the charm. So I just had to throw that out there before we get ready to go and let you guys know that this game is tied up and we are in the second quarter. So congratulations to the Cavs for not letting the Warriors run away with this game right now. And congratulations to Serena Williams.
I can tell you in the Bay Area, there's a lot of LeBron haters. So right now, and then we're, you know, it's the way it is. But LeBron's an awesome player.
No, that's okay. Well, not hate, but lots of love. Congratulations to Serena Williams. She has now won her 20th, not a Grand Slam. She's won her 20th major tournament. She won the French Open yesterday, and this was her third time winning the French Open. And now the only other player with more title wins than Serena is Steffi Graf. So congratulations again to Serena Williams for that amazing defeat yesterday. I mean, it was just a really, really great French Open, and looking forward to seeing Serena win on the grass courts of Wimbledon and the U.S. Open, and then she will be tied with Steffi Graf. That's just how I'm hoping that this plays out.
Yeah, it should play out. She's still in somewhat of her prime. She's not downhill yet, so I still have time for that.
No, Serena's still in great shape. Eric, is there anything you wanted, any sports news you wanted to close out with before we shut down for the evening and come back again next week?
Well, that pretty much sums it up, but I was going to throw in that Serena did all that with the flu. She was suffering from the flu this week.
Wow.
Yes.
So big congrats.
That's right. Yes, thank you for the reminder. That was awesome. Oscar, do we have any bills we have to pay, shout-outs to any sponsors, recognition that we have to give before we close out for the evening? Make sure we don't
forget
anyone.
The only thing we got to do is just go to Zazzle.com. to get your Nordic football gear and support our project. And don't forget to go like us on Instagram because we're blowing up on Instagram. Go see all these amazing women from the global status of American football, you know, and just go to Instagram. That's it. And follow our Facebook page daily for updates. So we will go enjoy the NBA playoffs at this point.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you again, everyone, for joining us this evening. I'm your host, Nkeshi Free. You can follow me on Twitter at Keshi's Cuties. That's KeshisCuties. You can follow my amazing co-host, Eric Brown, at Fit for Life. That's life with a Y. And, of course, you can follow Oscar and our Gridiron Beauties at Gridiron Beauties for all the updates on all things women's football around the world. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back again next week. Have a great evening. Good night.
Bye, everybody. Enjoy the NBA game.